This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and today I want to start sharing with you something that I came across on Facebook the other day. Now, it's a 32-page pamphlet written and published in Nauvoo, Illinois in 1844, the year that Joseph Smith was killed. It was written by a man who may have actually been a member of the mob that killed him. Now, this man was named Joseph H. Jackson. We're going to call him Joe. He moved to Nauvoo in 1842. He was hired by Joseph Smith to sell land for him. He was a lieutenant general in the Nauvoo Legion, and he provided testimony against Joseph Smith in a perjury court case just 1 month before Joseph Smith's death. And he was identified by Willard Richards as being a member of the mob that killed both Joseph and Hiram Smith in June 1844. Now, this 32-page pamphlet was published a few months after that in August, and it provides some fascinating insights that I've never come across before. Now, I am going to take some major creative liberties in the way that I present this information. I'm going to be rewording much of the old-timey 19th century language to make it more contemporary, easier for me to speak, easier for you to listen to, but I'm not going to be inventing or adding any content that isn't already there published in the pamphlet. I'm just going to be wording it very differently. So if you want to hear what someone close to Joseph Smith thought about him in the last years, weeks, days of his life, keep on listening, because here it is. A narrative of the adventures and experience of Joseph H. Jackson in Nauvoo, disclosing the deaths of Mormon villainy, Warsaw, Illinois, August 1844. My name is Joe Jackson, and I'm publishing this narrative to shine a light on the horrific iniquities practiced in Nauvoo among the Mormons in the name of religion. Now, the things I'm going to be telling you are offensive and disgusting. In fact, they're so offensive and disgusting that some of you may think I'm just making this all up, that such offensive and disgusting actions could only exist in someone's offensive and disgusting imagination. But let me assure you, this is all straight up legit, yo. And as you listen to my story, I hope it will become crystal clear that the reason I went to Nauvoo and ingratiated myself into the good graces of the so-called prophet in the first place was to discover and then to disclose to the world the truth about what's going on among the Mormons. Now, it's true that I had to lie and deceive as a way to get into Joseph's good graces. And some of you may say that me having done it this way makes me an unreliable narrator, that I've compromised my integrity by pretending to believe the nonsense that is Mormonism for nearly 2 years. Now, if that's what you think, fine, I don't blame you. But honestly, it was the only way I knew how to infiltrate Joseph's inner circles. And I hope that you come to see that the ends have justified the means. Now look, I'm not making any of this up. I'm telling you what I've actually seen and what I've actually heard. And many of my claims can be backed up by others, so if any of you need proof, I can provide it. But for now, I really just want to tell my story. Now here's something that I've been asked over and over again by people who don't really know the Mormon prophet. If this guy is as bad as you say he is, how on God's green earth did he get so many good, honest, God-fearing people to believe in him, to follow him, to unwaveringly love him? I lived among these people for 2 years, and I still don't know the answer to this question. It makes absolutely no sense to me at all. Make no mistake, for the most part, the Mormon people are good, devoted, hardworking people. And this is just my opinion, but that devotion, let me put it this way. There were hundreds of men in Nauvoo so devoted to the prophet that if he would have said, "Hey, see that guy over there? God wants you to go slit his throat," they would have immediately gone and done it right there on the spot. And they would have done it with a smile, with nothing weighing on their conscience, cheerful, grateful even for having the opportunity to further the work of their perceived Father in heaven. Now, how is this possible? Really, I have no idea, and I'll leave that question to the philosophers and the moralists. My objective here is simply to state the facts of what I saw and what I heard. And one of those things that I saw and heard that I found so peculiar, and you'll see this over and over in this narrative, was that all of Joseph Smith's instructions and commands, whether in public or in private, were delivered, as he would say, in the name of the Lord. So, for example, keep your homes clean and in order, thus saith the Lord. The Lord commands that you turn away all unclean things. Persecutors of the church must be neutralized in the name of the Lord. So, in the name of the Lord, he concocted the most vile plans for murder, assassination, robbery, seduction. I witnessed all of these things commanded and carried out in the so-called name of the Most High. You should know that I started writing this exposé well before the tumultuous events of the past several months that led to the arrest and execution of Joseph and Hiram Smith this past June. Now, I can't tell you how badly I wish that I'd been able to publish this while they were still alive, because now it makes me look like some kind of opportunist, like I'm trying to capitalize on these recent sensational events. But you're just going to have to trust me here. This has been my design for the past 2 years, to uncover and expose Joseph Smith for the fraud that he is, or was. And whether you agree that the manner of their deaths was justified or not, hopefully you will very shortly see that death was this man's just reward, and that this world is a far better place without this so-called prophet in it. My narrative. Before I first visited Nauvoo, people gave me a lot of conflicting stories about this city. Some said how great and modern and amazing it was. Others said how shady and corrupt and immoral it was. So from the gossip alone, I really had no idea where the truth actually lay. But my curiosity was strong, so I determined to check it out and learn the truth for myself. So while I was heading down the Mississippi in the fall of 1842, I decided to stop in Nauvoo and take a look around. I was also looking for work and thought maybe I could find some there, but mainly I was curious. Now I was immediately impressed and delighted by the beauty and industry of this amazing city. Now, so much has been said of this already by other authors and other publications that I won't belabor the point here, but it truly is a beautiful city. Now, on the day that I landed, it was the 10th of October, 1842, there was a great trouble brewing amongst the saints, having to do with some demand having been made by Governor Boggs of neighboring Missouri. I was unaware of all this at the time, but shortly before my arrival, Governor Boggs had accused the Prophet Joseph of ordering a recent assassination attempt on his life. So fear and intrigue were already swirling around the city before I ever stepped one foot into it. Naturally, when I stepped off the boat, being this out-of-work stranger that I was, many of the saints assumed that I'd been sent there as a spy to gain evidence against their beloved prophet for their enemy, Governor Boggs. Shortly after I arrived, many men who I have since learned belonged to the Danite Band visited me at my boarding house and quite boldly and suspiciously asked me all kinds of direct questions that really I thought was none of their business. Who was I? Why was I there? What was I intending to do? I really, like I said, had no idea what was going on at the time. I just thought they were being rude, so I never gave them the answers that they were looking for. I did notice, however, that soon after this, I was being followed. I was being watched very closely by everyone around me. A new friend of mine then told me what was going on, that the prophet thought that I was a spy, and I wasn't really sure what to do. But I figured that silence was just the best policy, that eventually people would see I wasn't doing anything wrong. I figured it would all just die down, so I continued my search for employment. Sometime the following November, I was hauling up some goods from the river that belonged to a Mr. Rawlison, and I was with the Mr. Finch. Now, we had hauled one load and were returning for the second load, and as we crossed the bottom between the temple and the river, a man called me by name. I immediately jumped from the wagon, thinking that it was a man who wanted to hire me for more work, so I walked towards this man, and Finch followed me from behind. When I got about 5 feet from the villain, he raised his arm at full length and said, "Damn you, I'm gonna give you what you deserve," and he fired a pistol right at me. The ball passed my head, and I felt the providential air as it barely missed the sides of my temples. I was so stunned that for a few minutes I had no idea what was going on, but I soon realized that my face and my eyes were burned with powder. Now, Finch was right behind me when that shot was fired, and he saw me stagger, and he immediately chased after my would-be assassin. But so speedy was the flight of Kishkumen, that's a line from their stupid golden Bible. I'm using it here just to be a smartass. Basically, the guy who shot me ran. Finch wasn't able to catch him. He got away. Finch and I then agreed to just keep the matter a secret, hoping that we could trip up our would-be assailants into eventually providing some clue about who they were, but it didn't work. Nothing ever came out of it, and I figured that it would be best for me and my safety to get the hell out of Dodge. And by Dodge, I mean Nauvoo. So I took my leave of Nauvoo and went off to a little town called Carthage to spend the winter. And there I quickly learned that the attitude of the Carthagites towards their neighboring Mormons, well, they really believed them to be the vilest of thieves. I heard so many stories, but I had so much admiration for the city of Nauvoo that I just had to determine the truth for myself. So that following spring, I decided to go back to Nauvoo to find out if Joe Smith was really as bad as people were saying. I also still wanted to find out who took that shot at me, and to find out if I could, whether or not the prophet had ordered that attempt. So before I went, I talked to Deputy Sheriff Harmon Wilson, and I told him all about my plan, that I'd be going back to Nauvoo, try to get close to the prophet, and that if he were really as crooked as people were saying that he was, I would find out, and I would report that to the world. Part of this, of course, was revenge, but it also just seemed like this super romantic, exciting adventure, and whether I found out the truth about Joe Smith or not, I would come away with it knowing more than I went in with it. So that next March, I went back to Nauvoo, and after being there a few days, I asked to meet with the prophet, telling him that I had important information for him. He invited me into his private room, and there, also in the presence of Heber Kimball, I told him my fictitious story. I told him that I was a criminal, that I was a fugitive from Macon, Georgia, and that I needed the prophet's protection. He really liked this. He lit up when I said this. And I told him that he would not regret putting me in his service. I would do anything that he needed me to do. This tickled his fancy wonderfully, and he said that this was like Joab coming to King David, and he said that he would make me rich as long as I obeyed his commands in the name of God, that he, Joseph, might fulfill his, God's, prophecies. He then explained that anything he might ask me to do would be right and lawful in the sight of God, even if I couldn't quite see that for myself. He said that I should trust him as a godly man and as a prophet, that he was endowed with power from on high. I then remarked that as to his religion, I honestly cared nothing about it, for I did not believe in the supremacy of a god. This changed the tone of our meeting, and it made him look at me very seriously and very suspiciously. He just stared at me, measuring me, without a word. But I didn't flinch. I told him that I was a desperate man, and that to prove my value, I would travel to Missouri and release his man, Porter Rockwell, from the Missouri prison where he was being held for the assassination attempt on Governor Boggs. "Well," said Joseph, "if you will release Porter and kill old Boggs, I'll give you $3,000. $3,000. Heber Kimball was right there the entire time. He heard this entire conversation. Of course, he wouldn't admit it to anyone now publicly, but Joseph Smith made it very clear to me that he would pay me $3,000 for assassinating his enemy. Just a few days after this meeting, Joe provided everything I needed for my journey to Missouri. He gave me a splendid black horse with a saddle, a bridle, and full provisions in saddlebags for my trip. "Now," he said, "go and perform in the name of God and let the little fellow out of jail, for my heart bleeds for him." Now, people who saw this transaction believed that I had purchased all of these items from Joe, because that's exactly how he designed it to look. Only Joe, myself, and Heber Kimball knew the truth of what I was going to be doing. After having this horse in my possession for 2 or 3 days, Joe and I took a ride together up to Edward Hunter's house, where Joe borrowed $100 and I drew his note for it on demand. Edward Hunter at this time was absent, but while we were there, his wife, Mrs. Hunter, brought a Bible to Joe, and she asked him to explain to him some passage in the 3rd chapter of Hosea in relation to the adulteress. Now, Joe replied that he would call on her again at another time and translate it for her, for which she thanked him kindly. Sometime later, I learned the significance of this particular scripture, that it was one of the proofs used by the prophet as a justification for his secret spiritual wife doctrine. But I'll get more into all of that later. After conversing there for a while, we rose to depart, and Joe gave Mrs. Hunter a very sanctimonious blessing. We then got on our horses and rode up the hill, where we were met by the holy patriarch Hiram upon his white horse. Hiram greeted us and told Joe that Brother Somebody, I don't remember his name, was sick, and that they had been sent for to go lay hands on him, for he was sick unto death. I rode to the house of the invalid with them, and we entered the room, and I put on a very serious and grave countenance while they both laid their hands on the sick man, and Hiram made a long, sanctimonious prayer. As we left the house, Joe pronounced a blessing on the house and over everyone that dwell inside of it. We then again mounted our horses, and Hiram went home, and Joe and I rode about 5 miles out onto the prairie, and all the way out and back, he talked to me and pressed me to kill Boggs. And once again, he told me that he would pay me well for it, and all this while, he insisted that it was the will of God and in God's name, and he offered me a reward for Boggs' blood in the name of God. This was all done with an air of sanctimonious gravity and with a look of innocence that would make one almost believe that the prophet really thought that he was acting under the command of heaven. I was utterly astonished to see this man concoct the most hellish plans for murder and revenge, and yet with sincere determination insist that it was right in the sight of God. And here, I believe, is the whole secret of Joe Smith's success. He had a singularly unreadable countenance that gave no indication of his real, true intentions and character. He had so long practiced duplicity that there was scarcely a compunctious feeling left in his bosom. He had no scruples in regard to the means he should employ for whatever advantageous end he was trying to attain. And this is how he was able to do it: to convince his followers that good was bad and that bad was good. He wore this mask of sincerity as he prostituted everything sacred for the purposes of lust, cupidity, revenge, or power. This ends part one of the account of Joseph H. Jackson. It takes us about 8 pages into a 32-page document. The rest of the story is on its way. Sing muse of the passion of the pistol.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew Ryan.
Carol.
Keith.
Ashley.
And I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear, give the Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did.
Anyone for the closing prayer?
It was a perfect, 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 a perfect crime. It was was a perfect, 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 a perfect crime. It was a perfect crime.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.